नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जय मुदीरयेत्। Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashta prayesha badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavatyuttama shloke bhaktim bhavati naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in the best of songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 5, Chapter 5, Lord Rishabhdev's Teachings, Text Number 23. Na Brahmanai Tulaye Bhutam Anyat Pashyami Vipraha Kim Ataha Param Tu Yasmin Nribihi Prahutam Shraddhaya Aham Ashnami Kamam Na Tatha Agnihotre Na Brahmanaistulehe Bhutamanyat Pashyami vipra kimatak parantu Yasmin ribi prahutam shraddhayaham Ashnami kamam natathagni hotre Na brahmanaistulaye bhutam anyat Pashyami vipra kimatak parantu Yasmin ribhi prahutam shraddhayaham Ashnami kamam natathagni hotre Nam brahmanaistulaye bhutam anyat Pashyami vipra kimatak parantu Yasmin ribhi prahutam shraddhayaham Ashnami kamam natathagni hotre Pashyami vipra kimatak parantu Yasmin ribhi prahutam shraddhayaham Ashnami kamam natathagni hotre Tulaye bhutamanyat Pashyami vipra kimatak parantu Yasmin ribhi prahutam shraddhayaham Ashnami kamam natathagni hotre Ladies. Na mat. Brahmanai. With the Brahmins. Tuliye. I count as equal. Bhutam. Entity. Anyat. Other. Pashyami. I can see. Vipraha. O assembled Brahmins. Kim. Anything. Ataha. To the Brahmins. Param. Superior. To. Certainly. Yasmin. Through whom. Nribihi. By people. Prahutam. Food offered after ritualistic ceremonies are properly performed. Shraddhaya, with faith and love. Aham, I. Ashnami, eat. Kamam, with full satisfaction. Na, not. Tatha, in that way. Agnihotre, in the fire sacrifice. Translation, O respectful Brahmins, as far as I am concerned, no one is equal or superior to the Brahmins in this world. I do not find anyone comparable to them. When people know my motive after performing rituals according to the Vedic principles, they offer food to me with faith and love through the mouth of a Brahmin. When food is thus offered unto me, I eat it with full satisfaction. Indeed, I derive more pleasure from food offered in that way than from the food offered in the sacrificial fire. Please repeat. O respectful Brahmins, as far as I am concerned, no one is equal to or superior to the Brahmins in this world. I do not find anyone comparable to them. When people know my motive after performing rituals according to the Vedic principles, they offer food to me with faith and love through the mouth of a Brahmin. When food is thus offered unto me, I eat it with full satisfaction. Indeed, I derive more pleasure from food offered than that way than from the food offered in the sacrificial fire. Srila Prabhupada's purport. According to the Vedic system, after the sacrificial ceremony, the Brahmins are invited to eat the remnants of the offered food. When the Brahmins eat the food, it is to be considered directly eaten by the Supreme Lord. Thus no one can be compared to qualified Brahmins. The perfection of evolution is to be situated on the Brahminical platform. Any civilization not based on Brahminical culture or guided by Brahmins is certainly a condemned civilization. Presently, human civilization is based on sense gratification, and consequently, more and more people are becoming addicted to different types of things. No one respects Brahminical culture. Demoniac civilization is attached to ugra karma, horrible activities, and big industries are created to satisfy unfathomable lusty desires. Consequently, the people are greatly harassed by governmental taxation. The people are irreligious and do not perform the sacrifices recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. Yagyad bhavati parjanya. What does that mean? Yeah. By the performance of sacrifice, clouds form and rain falls. Due to sufficient rainfall, there is sufficient production of food. Guided by the Brahmins, society should follow the principles of the Bhagavad Gita. Then people will become very happy. Annad bhavanti bhutani. That's the first part of that verse. When animals and man are sufficiently fed with grains, they become stronger. Their hearts become tranquil and their brains become peaceful. They can then advance in spiritual life, life's ultimate destination. Om Jnanati Marandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmiratam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, Lord Rishabhdev is continuing his instructions to his sons and also to assemble Brahmins. We sometimes forget that if you read at the beginning of this chapter, before he began his instructions, it describes how there's a large assembly of great sages and Brahmins, and among them, all his 100 sons are there also. So he's addressing their Brahmins. His sons would be considered Kshatriyas, their son of Kshatriyas. Of course, we have the 9 Yogendras, who are the very exalted sons, who would be considered Brahmins. But here he seems to be addressing the larger assembly of Brahmins. And he's praising the Brahmins. He's already identified himself as the Supreme Personality of God in several verses here. And now he's describing his relationship to the Brahmins. Now, this is, of course, a mutual relationship. The Brahmins have these qualities which will be delineated in the next verse. And the most important quality of the Brahmin is probably Brahmajanat Titi Brahmanaha, that a Brahmin must actually know what is Brahman. A real Brahmin has to be a Vaishnav. And a real Vaishnav must be a Brahmin also. So, the Brahmins know nothing else but service to the Lord, real Brahmins. And they're meant to be the guides of society. This is what Srila Prabhupada is expressing in this purport. One of the points he makes here is that without that brahminical guidance, society goes to hell. It's just like if the head of the political body, they call it the body politic, there's something called the body politic. And we have that idea also. It's mentioned in the 11th canto, that the Brahmins are meant to be the head, the Kshatriyas the arms, the Vaishyas the thighs, actually, and the Sudras the feet. So if all parts of the body are functioning nicely, then the body is healthy and it can live nicely. But if one part of the body is not working, then things don't work nicely. And the most important part is naturally the head. The head is what guides everything, where you're going, what your goals are. Everything is guided by the brain. So unfortunately, the modern society is characterized, as Prabhupada says, by ugra karma. And the whole culture is fraught with lust and sense gratification. That is the basic mood and the ethos in modern so-called civilization is not cultivating these higher qualities of Brahmins at all, but simply, how much can I get away with? How much can I enjoy? How much can I steal and cheat? Society is therefore suffering and will continue to suffer as long as that is the case. So Srila Prabhupada, he tried mightily to create some Brahmins through the reformatory practice of devotional service. As it said in this verse, that ends with Brahma Janatiti Brahmana, that Janmana Jayate Shudra, Janmana Jayate Sanskarad Bhaved Dvija, Vedapatad Bhaved Vipra, Brahma Janatiti Brahmana. So everyone is born a Sudra in the sense that you don't know anything. You're just a little animal, a little child's animal. Now, if you're born in a Brahminical family, naturally you'll begin to get training. And there'll be some scars. Some scars are Vedic performances that purify, that tend to purify and inculcate higher qualities. That's like the most famous one, Garbhadana Sanskar. Garbhadana Sanskar. Because as Rishabhdev has hinted, that you're born of my heart. Well, actually, everyone is born not so much from the body, that's part of it, but also from the state of consciousness of those who conceive the child. And so you can imagine, what state of consciousness people live in. It's not Krishna consciousness. It's not Brahminical consciousness. It's more or less animal consciousness. So the cultivation of a good population. Now think about that. That's what a civilization is made up of. That's what society is made up of. If you're in a society in which there's an overwhelming number of what Prabhupada called Varna Sankara, which means children and people raised without any samskaras or without any reformatory practices, then it's a hellish society. You have thieves, you have dacoits, you have addicts, you have all the lowest level of society are running wild, and many of them are running the society. They rise up to the top. Those who are, can claw their way to the top. You have the worst cheaters and people who are able to. And this is what we're living in. So you can see how the samskaras and the raising of good population is critical to a healthy society. So that samskar. But then there has to be study. There has to be training according to the shastra. This is the whole point, that the Brahmins are meant to be like walking shastra. They're meant to live it and know it and teach it. So therefore, Vedapada, if you want to be a vipra, means someone, then you need to study the Vedas. And this is the other quality, another point of the Brahmins. But then you become a vipra. But in order to actually become a qualified Brahman, you have to know Brahman. You have to know the absolute truth. In other words, you have to be a Vaishnava. We know from Bhagavad Gita that the absolute truth is Krishna. Param Brahma, Param Dava, Pavitam, Param Bhavan, says Arjuna. So this is more or less where we find ourselves. I mean, I certainly wasn't born with any samskaras or anything. But the process of Krishna consciousness is so powerful, as Prabhupada says in chapter 3, I was just reading this morning, that even a late beginner can become purified and elevated by the process of devotional service as given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his authentic followers. So, but still, we should know these qualities. We should know what does it mean to be a genuine Brahman. Because without Brahman, first of all, means, as Rishabhdev will describe, being in the mode of goodness. You know, shamal, damas, tapakshara, self-control, mind control, sense control, being clean, being religious, being learned in the Vedas. These are some of the qualities of the Brahman. And we know if you live in a temple for a while that you try to reform, that you may come to the devotional service with, we always do, most of us here, unless we're born in India and raised in Brahminical families, with very, very bad habits. And, it's very hard to get rid of those habits, especially if trained from childhood. So we need the reformatory practices that are there in good association so we can actually become clean, religious, self-controlled, and so forth. And Krishna helps from within the heart. As explained here, Vrishabhdev himself is saying, these Brahmins are very dear to me. This idea that he eats through the mouths of the Brahmins means that he's satisfied when the Brahmins are pleased. You remember the Govardhan Leela, when he was preaching to his father, stop this Indra Jagya. We don't need Indra. You know, he purposely angered Indra. He wanted to make a point. All we need to do is worship the Brahmins and the cows and Govardhan Hill, and feed everybody sumptuously with the abundance that's brought about by agricultural activities, and that will satisfy me, Krishna says, and everyone will become satisfied. And so Krishna is teaching there how important the Brahmins are as well. And of course, namo brahmanya devaya go brahmana hitaya cha. Krishna, brahmanya devaya go brahmana hitaya cha. He is very concerned about the welfare of the cows and the Brahmins. Because the cows and the Brahmins, they are what sustain Dharma within society. Right? The cows are religion personified. Bull and the cow. Cow, the milk is essential for deity worship, for maintaining good health. And the Brahmins, they personify this dharma in society. As Rishabhdev said, from my heart, you are born where dharma is, right? The backside of the Lord is adharma, meaning that he's turned away from you. When you're adharmic, when we're irreligious, then we've turned away from the Lord and he's turned away from us, in a sense. And he puts us in the care of the material energy. He stays with us as a super soul, as our best-wishing friend, but we more or less turned away from him. And that's to our detriment. So, Brahminical culture is part and parcel of Vaishnava culture, really. And you see how important it is, especially when, you know, you see the deities and those who are, you know, do deity worship regularly. The cleanliness, the punctuality, what state your mind is in. You know, what you do the rest of the time so that when you enter into the deity room, you're in a clean state of mind as well. And everything about it cultivates brahminical culture, brahminical qualities. And so these temples that Prabhupada worked so hard, temples and ashrams that he worked so hard to establish, are meant for creating Brahmins. It doesn't matter what your natural, you know, skill is. You may be a cook, you may be a cleaner, you may be a pujari. But still, we're meant to cultivate those brahminical qualities. It's not that we should think, oh, because I sweep the floor all day, or because I do something else, therefore I don't have to cultivate brahminical qualities. They're part and parcel of Vaishnav culture. And they again and again throughout the Bhagavad Gita, we see the importance of cultivating this mode of goodness in everything we do. The mode of goodness, of course, will not get us back to Godhead. We understand that just being in the mode of goodness is not good enough. But the mode of goodness is a platform upon which a further understanding of the absolute truth is more easily attained. So when we're self-controlled, we're regulated in our eating, in our sleeping, in our following the regular principles, then we become more receptive to the message of Godhead. We can more easily hear our rounds, isn't it? If you're sleeping too much, eating too much, and when it comes time to sit down and chant, the mind will be all disturbed, you'll fall asleep, you know? So the mode of goodness and the brahminical qualities are further the development of Vaishnav qualities. They're part and parcel of these Vaishnav qualities. We should not neglect that. So some of the points Prabhupada makes in this purport, of course, he roundly condemns a civilization dedicated to Ugra Karma. Now, this Ugra Karma is rampant. You know, this is coming from the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna is describing this horrible activities meant to destroy the world. You know, people think, this mentality of the demonic mentality is always thinking that I can get away with something, right? Remember the first quality that Krishna describes among the demons is dambha. Dambo darpo abhimanascha. He describes this at the beginning when he's contrasting the divine qualities and the demonic qualities. First he lists all these wonderful divine qualities. Some of them pertain to the sannyasis, as you described, brahmacharis, grihasthas, like that. And then he begins describing the demonic qualities. So this dambha is false pride, and it also means this deceptiveness. Deceit is dambha. And so this is a part and parcel of this age. This is the cheaters and the cheating. What is cheating based on? Deceit, isn't it? It's the idea is that you think you're getting something, but you're not. I'm cheating you, and you're cheating me, and you're like that. The cheaters and the cheated. So this idea is rampant. Now, when you think about it, Maya Devi herself, you know, as a service, her service is to keep us bewildered. You know, and if we want to be bewildered, we want to be cheated. This is why Prabhupada says, kind of puzzlingly in some ways, unless you think about it through, that they want to be cheated. Therefore, they accept something that's not gold as gold, or they accept something that's not real religion, not real bhakti, as religion. You know, this is the real problem. So how is it that you want to be cheated? Because to think of our relationship to Maya Devi, you know, the Mahamaya, she's cheating us. It's a big, what do we call it? A change up. What does it say? Bait and switch. Think about it. Maya Devi is encouraging us. When we're in Maya, when we're in illusion and in the modes of nature, we're completely convinced that the pleasure of these senses is to my benefit. That this is really what it's all about. And also, subtle pleasures, such as expanding a family and all of these other things that we consider to be where our real interest lies. Isn't it? We're totally convinced. And we live our lives, life after life, in that illusion. Because we're not the senses, we're not the body, we're not the mind. And yet we're considering that the benefit and the pleasure of these elements is our benefit as the soul. So where do we get this idea? Well, we get this idea because we want to forget Krishna, and we want to live in this dream world where we're Krishna, where we're God, where we're the center of attention, we're attraction. You see, that's the illusory energy. So this central principle of illusion, which we are living in as conditioned souls, this is exacerbated, this is magnified by the agents of Maya, by the agents of illusion, right? So everywhere you look, right, there are invitations to enjoy. Whether it's the billboards, or it's coming off of the, so many screens, or off of the radio, or the TV, wherever it is, or other people, right? This is why it's so dangerous to associate with materialists. Wasn't that the beginning of the instruction, practically? Mahatsevam dvaram ahavamuktes, tomo dvaram yoshitang sangi sangam. By associating with those who are completely absorbed in sense gratification, you open the doors to darkness and hell and suffering. But you don't realize it at the time. That just seems to be, these are my friends. This is what I do. I go out and party. Or you do it with some medium involved. You're reading something, you're seeing something, and you're associating with that energy. And so that illusion is maintained by allowing ourselves to be cheated in this way. And then, so Krishna consciousness tries, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness tries to turn us back toward the reality and to cultivate those qualities and to associate with those who are living the life of tapasya. This was the first instruction. Human life is meant for purification through divine austerity. Not because we necessarily like to be ascetics or anything like that, but because we understand that at the end of all of this austerity is Brahma Saukyam, is the spiritual happiness of association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead that doesn't end and is not cheating. It's based completely on this honest exchange of service. And this is where statements by Rishabhdev are so amazing. Because what he's saying here is that, and this is repeated most graphically in the pastime where the four Kumaras go to the spiritual world and they can't get in, and then they curse Jayan Vijaya. Remember that? Vaikuntha? And then Narayan comes there, and again he starts praising the Brahmins. These are the ideal Brahmins, these four Kumaras. And he's encouraging them, don't lament. You know, yes, you committed this offense, because now they're devotees. They've changed. They were Brahmavadis, right, more or less. But they have now become devotees by experiencing the fragrance of the lotus feet of Vishnu and the Tulsi Manjaris there. And so now they're lamenting, oh, we committed this great offense against these devotees, Jaya and Vijaya. And Narayan says, no, don't worry. You know, I this is all part of my plan, and if I would more than, you know, rather than offend the Brahmins, I would rather cut off one of my arms. He says, it's the most amazing statement, you know. It's a more graphic statement here, but Rishabhdev is saying the same thing. He's saying here that really I worship the Brahmins. I when they're satisfied, I'm satisfied. Because their only desire is to satisfy Krishna. You see how it works. In Krishna's Leela, which is, after all, what we're aiming for, what is the characteristic? The greatest characteristic is that all the residents of Vrindavan and Braja, they love Krishna. Which means that they simply want to see him pleased, somehow or other. When there's some hint of danger toward him, or some displeasure, then they become completely upset. You remember the Kaliya pastime, when there was some danger? They saw these omens. They become totally in anxiety when they saw him in that, wrapped up in those coils of Kaliya. It was like it was the end of the world for them. You know, this was their apocalypse, you know, as far as they were concerned. And then when he broke out, absolute, you know, unlimited exhilaration, joy, jubilation, like that. You know. Now, what was Krishna thinking at the time? He was also, you know, pleasing them by evoking and pulling out these ecstatic emotions. Their anxiety with seeing him in the coils of the Kaliya was another kind of ecstasy. Because when it comes to Krishna consciousness, it's the intensity of the absorption in thinking of Krishna that is the measure of your bliss. It doesn't matter if it's an anxiety or if it's an absolute love, you see? And because when Krishna is apart from you and you're experiencing this anxiety of separation, the meditation can be even more intense and the emotions can be even more intense. Therefore, that's considered the highest ecstasy. That's what Lord Chaitanya was showing and teaching. So, but Krishna is doing it for his devotees as well. He's giving these devotees a chance to serve as they want to serve. Whether it's the coward boys or his mothers or the gopis, they want to serve, they want to give a service in that particular way. And so he's facilitating it. He's serving them by giving them a chance to serve. You see how it's working? So in this way, it's on both sides, it's completely selfless. On both sides, it's completely selfless. And because it's simply based on absolute love and selfless love, it's an ocean of ecstasy. It's when we try to direct that inward and we try to, you know, enjoy, become the center of everything, that we suffer. For a little while, we think we're enjoying, and then for a long time, we're suffering. And that's what's going on in this world. And it's and now, you know, sometimes in certain parts of the world, like we're living here in L.A., and now, Southern California, there's a great problem. You know, there's a financial problem. And then in the back of mind, oh, wait a minute, there's also the water problem, right? People who worry about these things says, you know, this is a major, major problem. There's not enough water to support everybody's lifestyle like this. You know, there's no water coming down due to Ugra Karma. It's all, you know, one system. And because people have been so sinful, there's been so much bloodshed in this country, and so much horror, and the good karma is beginning to run out. You can see that. You know, from our point of view, we can understand. As Nirantra was saying, the country's going down. Well, how fast or in what way it's going down, we're not sure. But you can see that there's a lot of anxiety, because all of a sudden this false lifestyle that people have been living based on credit, you know, is suddenly the bubble has burst, right? And people are in tremendous anxiety. And all over this, you know, city, I mean, this country, people are cracking under the strain. Whether, you know, they're shooting, you know, the sheriff comes to foreclose the house and they shoot the guy. You know, it's my house. I live here. What do you mean I didn't make the payments, you know? In other words, it's too much. It's too much strain. So this is all part of the result of basing a civilization on Ugra Karma. It cannot last. It's self-defeating. It's destructive. And it becomes hellish in all so many parts of this planet. You don't have to read the fifth canto to read about a hellish situation, you know, whether it's the Congo or India. You know, there's so many poor farmers are committing suicide in the thousands, you know, one after another, because they just cannot make it because of the policies. You know, as Prabhupada says here, the taxation. Well, there's all kinds of ways that they can arrange things so that it becomes impossible to sustain a simple agrarian lifestyle, which is really what Brahminical culture is all about. Simple life based on self-sufficiency. You can't do that. If there's no water, if you can't sell your produce for anything, you know, if everything farming in America has ruined whole swaths of this country, because all the land's been bought up by these huge agribusinesses. They have this, you know, factory farming, and it's totally unnatural with pesticides and runoff, and the water is poisoned. This is what's going on around us. And because it's all based on this one thing, you know, profit motive. How much can we get? How much can we grab? To heck with the next generation. To heck with 10 years down the road. You know, whatever we can get now. This is animal life. This is the mode of ignorance. Prabhupada says, the more that you're in the mode of ignorance, the more you're concerned with your immediate personal gratification. And this is the culture we live in. So we're meant to push back. First, personally, by cultivating this knowledge and the lifestyle. It helps to read about the qualities of a Brahmin. It helps to develop them. It helps to, you know, there's so many lists in Bhagavatam, and of course in Gita we have, you know, in the 18th chapter. nectar of devotion. You know, I was reading recently about, you know, the 64 things we're supposed to do. So many regulations in the, you know, what you can do in the temple and what you shouldn't do in the temple. We need to regularly read those so that we can feel inspired to act in that way and refrain from acting in the other way. This is what it means to be guided by the Shastra. This is the main quality of the Brahmins, is that they revere the Shastra so much that they wouldn't, you know, dream of violating it. You know, to go against the Shastra conjunction is very, very painful for them. We should come to that platform. First, we have to know it. That's why cultivating of this knowledge, the classes, the study, is so important. Otherwise, it's very easy to just sink back into the haze of ignorance, in which you're sure to commit offense and sure to step back from your pushing forward in Krishna consciousness. It's a struggle because we're so conditioned in the other way, and we're living in this environment, in the larger environment where these things are unknown and they're actively working against them. So this Rishabhdev instructions are classic. They're, when they came out, you know, like so many other books we can remember, they changed everything. You know, in other words, devotees would read this, you know, Guru Nasasyat, Svajano Nasasyat. One should not become a guru, one should not become a father or mother, unless one is able to liberate your dependents. You know, Pungsastriyamadani Bhavanetan. Is that if you simply let your senses run riot, then you find yourself burdened by a tremendous attachments. You know, it just expands exponentially. When we're trying to decrease the attachments or increase our attachment to Krishna, we're going in the other direction. So these instructions of Rishabhdev help us to strengthen our will and our faith in order to develop these brahminical qualities that are pleasing to Krishna. You read the latter part of the 12th chapter. After all, isn't that what we're trying to do, is to become dear to Krishna? You know, right? That's what he's saying here. So, Advaishta, Savabhutana, Maitra, Karana, Evacha, Nimimoda, Nahankara, Samaduka, Sukakshami, Santushtak, Saratam Yogi, Yatatma, Dhritanishtaya, Mayapada, Mano, Buddha, Yoma, Bhakta, Samebhya. You read these verses, this is how to become dear to Krishna. Don't envy anybody, right? Advaishta, Maitra Karana, be friendly and merciful to all. Well, we know what that means. It means to give him Krishna consciousness. Give him a book, give him prasad, give him the holy name. Give him your company, write them on email or something. Give him some connection with Krishna. That's what it means, practically. Maitra Karana Vacha. Nir Mamo. That in itself is a great mountain to climb. Nothing is mine. To really come to that point, to see everything, including your own body and senses, as Krishna's. Nidahankara, that false ego, I and mine, I am the body, everything relations. Nidahankara. Samadukak stukakshami, to be tolerant and to be equal in happiness and distress. This is stressed so much in the Bhagavad Gita. Right at the beginning, if you want to become liberated, then you have to be able to tolerate the dualities of this world without freaking out one way or another. Become jubilant and lose everything when there's some opportunity for sense gratification, and become depressed and in anxiety when there isn't or when something is taken away. That's modes. But to be equipoised, because my apadamano buddhi, because one's mind and intelligence is dedicated to Krishna, these qualities, if you read them regularly, and you know that's the first, I think, prerequisite to try to develop them. We have to know what they are. After all, you know, we're trying to be devotees of Krishna. Therefore, we want to try to do what Krishna says. And so we know what Krishna says, develop this quality, says, okay, I don't have it right now, so I'll try to develop it. But if you don't know what it is, you're not reminded, this is what Krishna wants, this is what Krishna wants, then we'll tend not to develop it. We'll tend not to think that it's important. So that's why the study of the Shastra is so important. And Prabhupada's purports, he's constantly reiterating these, you know, these points and giving us such insight, giving us, how does this 5,000-year-old book, how does this statement from Rishabhdev relate to the present day? Exactly, this is what he's giving us here in this purport and so many purports. It brings it up to date for us here in this you know, 21st century. It doesn't matter that it's 45 years later. It's eternal knowledge. they're still doing plenty of Ugra Karma. It's not outdated yet. You know, civilization still. We can see how it totally relates. You know, he talks here also about, you know, the civilization based on the automobile and the trucks going here and there. So everything is totally pertinent. And by hearing these, you know, instructions and trying to put them into practice, we can come to that brahminical platform and become dear to Krishna and Lord Rishabdev. Thank you very much. I went over a little bit. Maybe we had one or two questions. Yes.
Hi, Prabhu. Thank you for a very wonderful
Hare Krishna
exposition on Prabhupada's purport and the verse today. But there are a couple of statements you made that may require a little bit further clarification. First, you were talking about possibly Rishabdev addressing a wider audience of brahmanas. But in the previous chapter, we see that there were 10 kshatriyas headed by Bharat, then there were Navayogendras, and then the other 81 were actually brahmanas. So it's quite possible he was talking just to his own sons, because there were 81 brahmanas present there. It says that they were qualified brahmanas. And then the other thing was, you said that a brahmana has to be a Vaishnava, a real brahmana, which is true. And then you said a real Vaishnava has to be a brahmana, which may require a little explanation, because we know that Krishna was talking to Arjuna, quintessential kshatriya. He had to have the kshatriya qualities to go out and slaughter people en masse. He was, you know, if he was, somebody say if he was a real brahmana, he wouldn't have gone to fight. He would just sit down and, you know, throw water this way and light fires that way. But he picked up weapons and went out and fought. So it seems that one can be, I mean, Bhishmadev was a kshatriya, he was a devotee. He died in Krishna's presence with arrows through his body. So it may seem that that's not, that statement requires a little clarification.
Okay. Well, what I had in mind there is that, yes, in the social structure of things, one can function in any way. I mean, we know that there are many Shudras and Vaishyas who also are great devotees. But the essential qualities of, you know, what is the essential quality that, you know, Krishna gives in many places is to be a devotee. And in my Arpita Mano Buddhir, that many times in the Gita gives this quality. And sense control, control of one's mind, to be clean, you know, these qualities have to be there. They're evidence of Vaishnava. I mean, you can give instances where, someone was in the Avadhuta stage and he didn't appear to be clean. Even Rishabdev, you may think, and as time goes on, it becomes more and more amazing, the pastimes of Rishabdev, when he actually retires. But what I meant by that is that this phrase that I, Brahmajana Niti Brahmana, maybe that's what I was really thinking of, is that a real Brahman must know Brahman. Prabhupada would give this verse, especially to differentiate from the smarta Brahmins, those who may know so much Shastra, they may have these external qualities, but they don't know and they don't worship Krishna as the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so they're Brahmins in name only. So that essential quality of knowing that the Supreme Absolute Truth is a person, and that person is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that has to be there in every Vaishnava. The essential quality of a Brahman. Sri Shachi Guru.
If I may just make a statement about what Archita Prabhu was asking, is that isn't it true in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is also advising Arjuna to come to the mode of goodness? He mentions many times as a prerequisite for devotional service.
Yeah, he's encouraging him and he describes that. In other words, he was put into an illusion by Krishna. But by the crying and the trembling and all of that, he was kind of in the mode of ignorance. He was shoche. He says, ashochan, his very first words, that he shouldn't lament. But lamentation is a sign of the mode of ignorance, to always be lamenting. That's why this is the culture of victims, isn't it? Everyone wants to be in a group where he can be a victim, and then he can sue someone or he can claim some right. You know, if I'm, I've been victimized. My ancestors were victimized, therefore you owe me reparations. Right? That's mode of ignorance, lamenting. You know, I have something, you took it away, and I'll sue you. You know, this is all mode of ignorance. Someone with that lady? Okay, last.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a beautiful class.
Hare Krishna.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada talked about the food grains, how important they were for a healthy body and peaceful mind. And I was wondering, is prasadam absolute? Like, if I take anything, like, you know, say something that's tinned, that's cooked already many months before and kept in a tin, and I offer it with a lot of love and devotion, is that like prasadam, or does prasadam also have, like, different, under the different gunas, like in goodness, passion, and ignorance?
No, prasadam cannot be in the modes. You're saying if something is kept in a tin and you offer it with love and devotion? Well, the problem with that is that...
What is it?
Canned food, yeah. Well, again, we have to know. In other words, we have to know what is the standard of what Krishna wants. And I think the first thing you learn in the kitchen is to try to minimize or eliminate any canned thing because it's been around for a long time. And I probably didn't like that. Even in frozen foods, he was saying, you know, you can't do that. There's a whole pastime in Tehran, So the question is, well, what is the quality of my love and devotion if I'm really not really willing to learn what is it that Krishna wants? You know, if I'm preparing someone for someone, but I don't take the trouble to learn what do you really like, but I'm saying, oh, I prepared it with such love and devotion, but I can't eat it, you know. I can't eat it. Then where is the real love and devotion? So I would say that really it's not something imaginary. This is where Shastra comes in, and association with sadhus. You know, an experienced cook who really knows, you know, was trained under Prabhupada, then they're like an acharya for cooking. And we should learn from them. What is it that Prabhupada likes? What is it that Krishna likes? And then we can really cook with love and devotion. Otherwise, it can become just an imagination. We're imagining that, you know, Krishna's enjoying it, but it's really not, it may have some potency as prasadam, but it's not going to be on the level of something that's offered in the altar with great love and devotion. That's my opinion on that. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.